Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to Rogue Startups, episode 253. Craig, how are you this week?
I am good, man. I'm good. Last day of school here for the kids about an hour ago. And so summer is officially here and my time is going to be stretched between all sorts of fun and family and work and that whole delicate balance that we all try to achieve. But yeah, it's good. It's going to be an exciting summer.
Very nice. Very nice. Yes, we've been living that for the first month here. You know, July 4th is... it's kind of a mixed blessing for me because it's one of my favorite holidays. I love fireworks. I love to blow shit up, you know, and it's just like, it's kind of like a pinnacle moment in summer for me. Like it is the quintessential moment of summer. You get together with friends and family and have the picnics and you do the fireworks and barbecues and all that good stuff. And we did all of those things last weekend, but it also means that like summer is kind of halfway over for my kids because they go back to school at the beginning of August and they got out at the end of May. So it's bittersweet. Like I feel like, oh crap, it's all downhill from here. But you know, I also realize that's, you know, a dumb way to look at it because I've got vacation coming up and we have, you know, two more camping trips this month. And yeah, I mean, there's lots of fun stuff. And we're going to the Renaissance Festival this weekend in south of Denver. So, you know, there's plenty of good, fun stuff coming in the summer here. But yeah, it always makes me a little sad after July 4th because of that.
Yeah, that's a trip, man, that your kids go back August 1st. Like, yeah, I mean,
it's August 7th or 8th or something like that. It's way too freaking early. I mean, just like, I have a lot of thoughts about that, but that's not what this podcast is about. But there is some big news this week on your end.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we announced last week that we closed a funding round. So yeah.
Congratulations.
All sorts of new responsibility and pressure and stress and everything.
That's nice. That's nice. So, I saw the public details about it. It's a $750,000 investment from Automatic and Team Yoast and some other individual investors here. You know, my first question to you is, what are you going to do? You got the shit ton of cash you're sitting on top of now. What's the plan?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the whole premise of the money we raised was to go after the private podcasting market. So private podcasting for what we call like the maker community, you know, online courses, membership sites, online communities who want to offer private podcast content to their members. And then the other application or kind of persona of it is companies wanting to have internal employee only podcasts. And both of those are much higher touch sales. Especially the company side, then we're equipped to deal with, frankly. And so a lot of this is just around hiring a really kick-ass sales team and building out the few things on the product side that we really need to stand apart from folks. So that's what it's all about.
That is amazing. And congratulations to you and the whole team for putting that together and pulling that off. And you did this all stealth. Like there was no back channel discussion. I mean, I didn't hear a peep of this. And then all of a sudden Friday afternoon lighting up Twitter and I'm like, holy crap, that's amazing. So yeah, you were playing this one close to the vest.
Yeah. I mean, it's the kind of thing that like for folks who have raised money before, like it's somewhat uncertain for like kind of a long period of time and then like some things fall into place and then it, you know, is pretty certain. But I mean, we really just got the last pieces of paper signed a couple of weeks ago. So it's, you know, it was frankly up in the air for the first few months of the year. And then the last month or so is pretty sure that it was going to happen. It's just a matter of kind of how much and from whom and everything. So yeah, just not wanting to count my chickens before they're hatched, I guess.
Now, I have to ask, how did this whole thing get started? Like you had this idea. Did you reach out to other people? Did they reach out to you? Did you broker this stuff through Tiny Seed? Like how did everything sort of come about?
A little bit of everything, I guess. So I I did a fair amount of just kind of networking and reaching out to people, letting them know what we're up to. From that, other introductions were made. And yeah, I think that's just how life kind of works. Generally how a lot of it went. Tiny Seed does not do follow-on rounds themselves, but they do kind of share what we're doing with their investors who then can invest. And I mean, that's kind of how it all worked, both from kind of the Yoast and the Automatic side to kind of the individuals, you know, some individuals, you know, outside of Tiny Seed and some individuals that are associated with Tiny Seed.
So it's interesting that Matt Mullenweg got involved in this, because I wouldn't have necessarily thought that, you know, he would be the one specifically interested in like this private podcasting space, or even like to be a big supporter of Castos in general. I mean, it's not that you're not important in the WordPress community and haven't made a splash there and clearly an impression. But at the same time, like if I was thinking of, well, what's Matt going to invest in next? I don't know that Castos would have been in my top 10, because it seems like there are a lot of other things in WordPress that he might consider more important. So did he like talk about, you know, what is it about Castos that you know, attracted him here?
Yeah, so I didn't talk to Matt directly. Automatic has kind of a whole biz dev arm that were the folks that I chatted with. So yeah, I can't say from their end, like what was interesting about this specifically, but I mean, it like, I think it seems to me like, and this is just me, like this is me talking, not anything I know about kind of their strategy or anything, but it seems to me that this is not so far from like their core competency of like, you know, democratizing the web, right? Like democratizing content, podcasting by its nature, open RSS, you know, free to a lot of people. There is like the platform limitations like Apple and Spotify that can confound that, but by its nature, like podcasting can be run kind of like a blog just from someone's website. So again, this is just me. I think that it's not so different than like what they're trying to do. And then if you look at what they do with, you know, WooCommerce and some of these things with, you know, monetizing traffic and websites and, you know, introducing commerce, that like private podcasting and the things we're doing with like paid access to private podcasting is kind of in line with a lot of stuff that WordPress does, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, knowing what I know about the WordPress community and how Automatic works, I would have a hard time thinking that Matt didn't sign off on this personally. Like it had to cross his desk and they had to say, all right, look, we want to invest in Castos. What do you think about this? Here's the details, you know, because Matt's not the kind of guy that just sort of lets things run on the side without him having some kind of say in here. I mean, that's historically been the WordPress community. So yeah, I mean, to get signed off by Matt, that's quite a vote of confidence there. So congratulations on that.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Yeah. It's a trip I was thinking about, like in a company that size, like how much of this happens without someone like his knowledge and can, you know, how much, you know, authority do some people have to do things? Like, I don't know what the answer to those things is, but it's definitely interesting to think about that. Like in your and I's business, we know pretty much everything that happens. And as the businesses get bigger, there are definitely pretty big things that happen that, you know, the CEO and the founders just don't know because they don't need to. So I don't know at what point that happens, but that's just an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. Nobody here is going to be getting into the head of Mountain Mulloway anytime soon. So yeah, that's awesome. All right. So I have another question for you. What is your greatest concern at this point? You're sitting on this huge pile of cash here. You know, what freaks you out the most right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest challenge to tackle, and it's why we wanted to raise money just to have more resources to achieve it, is kind of making sales work at a kind of mid-market to enterprise level. So we've proven it a bit. You know, we do have some customers at that price point, and it's just doing a lot more of it. And that's everything from, you know, getting a bunch more leads to, you know, nurturing and converting them is, you know, the big thing that we just needed help with. And so that's the challenge.
Right. But what about that? Like, so if I'm all reading between the lines, it can't all scale. You're, come on, you're a sales guy. You get this stuff, right?
No, I mean, it's a little tongue in cheek, but all of it scares me and is the stuff that, like, that's all I'm spending time on right now is sales and, you know, pipeline and, you know, what can be kind of self-service you know, marketing driven sale, you know, customer acquisition, what needs to be marketing driven, like lead acquisition for sales. How do those leads go into the sales pipeline? How do we nurture them? How do we close them? What does our pricing and packaging look like? Like, we have the V1 of all that stuff, you know, but like, we're hiring for 2 sales reps right now. And like, we're going to bring these people in, say, like by the middle of August, like they need to be able to be successful. And so like, it's just making all of that as good as it can be. Because like, what's interesting is, you know, when you start mapping out the math of like what a sales rep should be able to do in terms of revenue is like doubling our revenue by this time next year with 2 good salespeople. And so it's just a lot of pressure for me to say like, okay, that's their potential, you know, and that's what we can pay them for. It's up to all of us, you know, Matt and Sam and me, from like a marketing perspective, to drive the leads, and then for those folks to take and convert those leads and generate revenue. So yeah, I mean, that's, it's all like just what I'm working on.
Right. Right. So, interesting tangent. So have you ever heard of a site called Academic Research in Your Hands?
No, that's a very long URL, but no.
Actually, it's an even more obnoxious short URL, because it takes the first letter of every one of those words and condenses it down into almost a nonsense word that's 5 letters long. It's rariyh.com.
Okay.
And you're like, what the, like, the first time I got an email from them, I had to like look them up, because I'm like, who the hell, what is this spam site here?
Yeah.
And I had signed up for them. Like, so the guy like goes and condenses academic research about sales and marketing and e-commerce and other stuff in general. And what's awesome about it is that he basically, it's the cliff notes of all of that academic research, but in like human language, not academic language.
Yep.
And he just published something this morning that talked about a pharmaceutical company that, instead of just offering commissions on closed sales, they offered commissions on activity, like sales activity, meetings booked, calls made, you know, number of contacts reached out to, et cetera, that kind of stuff. And they noticed that in this one company, those that were basically getting the higher commissions based on the activity were also the ones that were generating the sales too. So, you know, this is like, it's a data point of one, really. You know, your mileage may vary. Tax, title, and license are extra, not valid in the state of California, that kind of stuff. But it was interesting to see that, like, by incentivizing the activity, they actually were able to get the salespeople to make more sales, even those that would have not normally done it, just based on the closing rate, you know? So I wonder if that's something that you might consider or think about for Castos.
Yeah. So I think this is a huge point, and something that we'll be talking a lot more about, or I'll be exploring a lot about, and kind of report back on what we find, is how to compensate salespeople. And like what we saw with Chris before at Podcast Motor. Hi, Chris. I know you're listening to the show, and thanks for reaching out. And I think Dave will touch on this later, is, you know, how we paid Chris, I think very naturally and appropriately, drove a lot of how he worked, you know, and from like, you know, closed deals or book calls or, you know, make outbound emails, you know, like you're talking about. Like, I think that we have to think about, and people just in general should think about, like, what is the desired outcome, and then compensate your sales team on that. If it's just you're in the discovery phase and you want to have a bunch of calls, then I think you should pay people on calls booked or calls held. I think we're past that, to where we have an idea of like the need and the product and kind of the market. And so it's actually closing sales. But even with that, is like, do you pay people, you know, one time up front, or is it like for the life of the customer, or like all of these kinds of things? So like, it's this whole hornet's nest of like subtopics and angles around sales compensation.
Yeah. I mean, if that follows into the same thing that I'm having right now with affiliate compensation. So, you know, I have an affiliate program with Recapture, and, you know, I've had a few people sign up for it. I, you know, have very small number of actual contributing folks to that sales pipeline. So they're the only ones that benefit from it. And, you know, I've got a new guy that was asking me to like alter my terms, because he's, you know, he says he's going to bring a bunch of clients over from Jilt.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed me some stats on a dashboard, so I don't think he's bullshitting me. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, now I got to kind of rethink this, because I wasn't really planning on doing that. But, you know, this guy looked like he had a pretty substantial amount of customers, would move the MRR if he brought them over. And he claims that they're all on the upper end of the revenue scale. So that, you know, further tips it in his favor and in my favor. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that you have to constantly reevaluate this stuff, because whatever you said a year ago might not be valid now.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And so we got some feedback from listeners on your topic of sales from the last episode, right?
We did. So I want to do a couple of shout outs. First to Duncan Murtaugh. Thank you for the Loom, Duncan, and the awesome suggestion of Lemlist. I'm actually using it, so I appreciate that. And in fact, after this podcast is over, I'm going to be launching my first A-B test cold email thing. There was great debate on Friday as to whether I should have a long form or short form email in my mastermind. And so I'm going to test both, because I conceive merits of both sides of this. And, you know, I had cold email experts on both sides telling me that I should do one versus the other. So I'm like, we're just going to try them both. I've got enough leads. We can try them both. So I'm excited to do that today. And shout out to Simon Bennett for thanking me for the catch in the wave here. Appreciate the kind words there, Simon. And for everybody else and your positive thoughts and vibes and likes and all that good stuff on Twitter, I appreciate all of that as well. Recapture is definitely pulling in some new Jilt leads here, and we are very much working toward getting that all done. We did our big launch about 5 days ago for all the upgrades that we needed to get out there for Jilt. So it's been a chaotic time, to say the least. But yeah, now that that's out there, we are looking at some other things in addition to the cold contacts to see if that works. If that is working, then you know, I'm going to ramp that up separately. And I have a discussion that's scheduled with Chris tomorrow. So we'll talk about that. By the time Chris hears this, it'll be after the call. But yeah, so we'll be talking about that. And if my outreach does actually have some traction, then it might make sense to hire Chris for a short-term gig to start go reaching out to these customers and try to bring them over, because there is definitely a window of opportunity, and that is slowly closing at this point. It's a month old, but you know, based on what I saw with the cart hook abandoned cart shutdown, you know, there's an initial burst, and then people sort of slowly trickle out of there from there. So
yeah,
I mean, there's probably a significant chunk that aren't going to do anything until it finally shuts down next year, and then we'll probably see another jump as well. But for now, you know, I've got my hands full with migrations and other things. So that's all very positive and encouraging news. And maybe some additional product follow-on is happening here. It may or may not be happening. I'm not saying at this point.
We talked in a previous episode about like product influences, you know, like how are you seeing that at this point with the stuff that like the Jilt customers are asking for and that you all are needing to do, and then like the pipeline that you have in your head, and like how things are looking from that perspective. Like at this point, is that all kind of leveling off or what?
Well, it's kind of weird. So funnily enough, about, I'll say maybe 2 years ago, 18 months ago, it was probably 2 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, I noticed that Jilt had revamped their email editor. And then I got screenshots of it one day, because I think we were checking it out for other reasons. And I noticed that theirs looked a hell of a lot like mine. And before, it didn't look anything like ours at all. So I was like, oh, interesting. But we are, I guess we're using kind of a standard React component for that. So, and we had ours in place for a long time. So I don't think that Jilt went out and copied us. That doesn't make any sense, because we were smaller than they were. But I think that they, you know, took that same look and feel and put that in there. And so we looked at what they had and there was like, oh, well, we could throw in like these five or six other email editor enhancements. And they're not that big, but they were things that would dramatically improve. So we kind of, we were sort of approaching a feature parity with Jilt on a lot of things in the editor stuff. And now that we're getting migrations over, customers are, you know, asking for certain things. So there's a different set of emails that they provided. So they had like receipt emails and welcome email series and other transactional emails that were available. So they could, like, for example, replace all of the transactional emails inside of WooCommerce. You could shut them all off and turn Jilt's on, and then you would have one place to see everything, one consistent look and feel, et cetera. So, you know, I see some of those things creeping onto our list. I mean, a couple of them already are there. You know, we had to finish up the broadcast emails. That was a must have. And now we're able to do that. And Jilt was able to do that as well. So the customers that are coming over, they get this. That's great. But there were definitely other things that we didn't have, like that welcome series. So we're adding that now. And then we're also, we already threw on some stuff about coupon code support for EDD that we didn't have that Jilt did. And we're pulling over a lot of EDD customers from Jilt. So that was kind of an important thing to get in there. So we're, you know, we're finding little things like that and dropping them onto the roadmap. But, you know, from a bigger standpoint, you know, I'm not looking at recapture as, oh my God, if I only had these three big features, I could really compete. You know, like I don't see that now. Those aren't the things that are missing from recapture at the moment. And I don't want to add those to recapture because our core simplicity is what people like. Like that's the same language I keep hearing from customers over and over. It's easy to use. I like how quick it was to get started. I like the fact that it's uncluttered. I like the fact that, you know, it's easy to navigate, et cetera, et cetera. These are all comments that they make to me largely unprompted. So, you know, I want to maintain that because clearly that resonates with the customers. And so, you know, with that in mind, there's only so much you can start cramming into the feature bucket at that point. So I think we're looking at a strategy of expanding laterally instead of in more depth within the product. So that's why we're exploring right now a new possible, it's not really a competing product, but it's like a product in the family that would be complementary. That's what I'm looking for. That's the word I want.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. I can relate that, like, when a product gets relatively feature complete, you start looking other places. And I guess, like, we're kind of doing that with private podcasting, right? Like, that our core product for conventional podcasting is pretty complete. And that, yeah, you start looking to either really do things with sales and marketing to drive revenue, or if it's easier, doing it with product if there's a gap in the market. So yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, man. How big of a kind of project or feature is this that you're looking at?
Well, it's early. We just started investigating it this past week, but I found this opportunity and it looks like it has incredibly low competition. And it's a relatively simple thing to build. That's what it seems like, but we're going to build it as its own service. So it's not going to be like built into recapture. It's a separate thing, separate standalone thing. So you can use them independently, but I will promote them across the thing. So that's going to be how I actually get some of my first customers for this new service, is to use the recapture list to bootstrap that. But, you know, I haven't gotten an official version of this yet, but this isn't like months of development. Yeah. And I think we could get something up there pretty quick. My goal is to have it out there before Black Friday this year, because things are going to start going up in September. And if I can have it out and ready by October, then we can catch the last minute crowd and I can still do promotions with it to the recapture list and see some product growth before the end of the year here.
So, like, just based on that and knowing the space and the dynamics of Black Friday, I would guess this is like not something that like your superpower users would want to use, but maybe something that's a little more kind of mid-market, because I know those power users aren't adding anything kind of last minute.
It will depend on the store. But yeah, I mean, in general, you know, if you're a big store, you kind of try to get things locked down by late September and then leave it the fuck alone.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, it'll be for the stores that are still struggling to sort of get everything nailed down, but that's okay because that'll give me some time to sort of harden up the service before we bring on the bigger customers.
Yeah.
You know, that, and it definitely is one of those things that you want it to make sure that it's pretty bulletproof. So yeah, I mean, I'm fine with doing it on the mid to low market to start with, just to get some traction, but I'm really excited about it because it's all usage based. So like, you know, I get to charge pennies per transaction. And it's not like a payment service, but you know, it basically is it has to do with the checkout. And yeah, I mean, I think this could be pretty lucrative on a store of moderate to high volume.
How are you thinking about the balancing of like priorities and like people resources and your time and everything between these two things? Cause I mean, Recapture's got good traction. Like, is there a risk of this new thing taking away from the traction and the growth you're seeing there? Like, how are you thinking about that?
There's probably a risk, but at this point, you know, I just went from three things down to zero in the span of 12, or three things down to one in the span of 12 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do feel like there's some extra bandwidth in there for me to look at the second thing and, you know, develop it as a side thing. I'm still not like, you know, if I do, like, for example, if I get Chris to do cold sales outreach on this contract thing here, you know, that means I'm not doing the cold sale. So now I've got more bandwidth for other things like this. And, you know, the main concern I have is that my developer, Mike, he doesn't have like as much to work on with Recapture unless we start going into like, you know, technical debt and stuff like this. So this is something that could really move the needle. Technical debt doesn't change my MRR. So, you know, I would like to see this stuff get out there because then what I could do is I could hire him on full time. And then we can also do that other technical debt. Like I can thread that in when he's got, you know, less of the other bigger projects to work on. Cause I don't think this other thing is like this huge gargantuan years long effort or months long effort. You know, once you get it to a certain point, I think you're done. And if it starts generating a decent amount of revenue, then either we can do more things with Recapture or we can do bigger things or we can start a third thing. Like there's all kinds of options there. So yeah, I mean, I'm trying to get to having that extra pool of MRR to be able to do that sort of choice, you know, have those sort of choices that are more flexible.
Yeah. That sounds interesting, man. I'll be keen to hear how the balance goes because it does seem like easy on the surface, but just, you know, multiple things competing for headspace is a real thing. Like you've seen since giving up the consulting thing, right, to focus on Recapture. And
yeah,
I mean, this is, I say that only because this is my first time having one thing to focus on and it's really nice. And like, like you, I've been, you know, dancing with, you know, multiple dates for several years. And like, it's really nice to be able to just focus on one thing at this point. But yeah, I do see, and I know what this thing is you're talking about. Like, it does seem like a good opportunity. So be keen to hear how that goes, like all the way from like product to launching to cross promoting and how those can play off each other and things like that. Cause they do seem complementary, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, I'm not necessarily starting this from a cold start makes a big difference. You know, I mean, I've got several thousand on the Recapture email list and, you know, this is definitely an advantage that I didn't have before. You know, it's like what the list of Rob's unfair advantages. You have a skill, you have an audience, you know, growth hacking or whatever. Well, in this case, I've got an audience and I know their pain at this point. So, you know, I'm definitely not leveraging this from a position of weakness. It's more of a position of strength.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Trying to be smart about it anyway.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's cool. I wanted to talk about and get your kind of thoughts or impressions on it. Something that we're kind of struggling with and batting around internally is we were supposed to have a team retreat last summer. Obviously it was canceled. Would love to have another one.
I can't imagine why. I mean, you know, it just totally escapes me.
Yeah. Would love to have another one or at this point because we were 3 people last time and we're 14 people as of today.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, we, you know, many of us have not met. And it's not so straightforward. Just say, yeah, fuck, let's do it. You know, let's go to wherever. Fortunately, like, we have the money to do it. But just me as like a team member and as like the, you know, the boss kind of says like that, you know, there's an element to this that is kind of reckless, you know, like having people from all over the world, literally getting on airplanes and flying to a place and us hanging out in a conference room and, you know, restaurants and stuff like that for 2 or 3, 4 days. Like, I don't think it's super dangerous, but I also don't think it's like totally cool. So it's just something we're kind of, yeah, we're struggling with how to make that decision. I say we, cause it's me that needs to make the decision in the end, but
you, yourself, and I, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to get like the team involved to, and, you know, getting their input and feedback and kind of get a sense from how everyone's feeling about it, because ultimately it's their kind of personal decision about like, yeah, I'm cool with this and I'm comfortable with traveling and being around people that I don't know. And some of them are vaccinated and some of them aren't vaccinated. And so it's just complicated, man. I've chatted with a few folks that have, you know, companies that have done team retreats, and they're kind of in similar boats. I saw a tweet thread between the CEOs of Buffer and Help Scout kind of talking about the same thing last week. And it's just, yeah, it's weird that like, I feel like this is as good as COVID has gotten in a very long time, you know, and like maybe we're at the as good as it's going to get for a while phase. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't have an answer, but it's just a thing we're thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. So, you know, I told you earlier that we're having big snow fall edition here, summer edition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the motives behind it was the fact that we had all gotten vaccinated. So that was kind of a prerequisite. You know, I didn't feel comfortable until I knew that, you know, I was personally vaccinated. But I think that was sort of a general thing that other people in the group didn't want to hang out with other people if they hadn't gotten vaccinated, because, you know, we're putting each other at risk by doing that. And by being vaccinated, we're less at risk. So, you know, that feels like a starting point. But at the same time, I know, you know, we're all in North America. So that's a data point that you don't necessarily have in your favor, because you're scattered all over the globe, and vaccine distribution all over the globe is not uniform and it's not consistent. So, you know, somebody may want it and simply not have access to it, and may not have access to it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a bit of iniquity to take into account there. And I, you know, I don't have an answer for you. And I, you know, my suggestion was going to be what you already said, which was, you know, talk to your team about it, see what they feel like, what do they say, you know? And I think you should, the one thing you should try to do is just say, look, I want everybody to be profoundly honest about this. If you have misgivings, please, I want to hear about it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not a time for you to stay silent in the background. If you have a misgiving, I need to know, like, it's important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there is that tendency, I think, when you're in the position of authority, that people don't want to give you bad news, and you kind of have to prompt them to say, look, it's okay to give me something I don't want to hear. Because I need to know. I need to know how you're feeling about it. And that's important. So, you know, that would be my one tidbit there, based on prior experience, where you say something and you expect them to take it the way that you think you're giving it, and they take it a different way because you're the boss.
Yeah. Yep.
I hate that. I hate that.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And I mean, to the point where, you know, we have talked about it in our team meetings, and I have brought it up in Slack and basically got no feedback. And then I created a survey and sent it to everyone, and, you know, asked everyone to respond. And so now, like, I have hard data points from most people. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot of what you're talking about is, you know, I can sense some reluctance just in general. And yeah. I have a lot of reluctance. And so maybe that's just me projecting kind of how I feel. You know, like, I would love to see everyone and for us all to be able to get together. But honestly, I don't think it's smart. You know, like, I don't think it's smart, and maybe we'll do it anyhow, but I think we might not too. So, well, yeah, it's just interesting.
Another alternative you might consider, and, you know, I hate suggesting virtual conferences, but throw it out to the team and see, you know, is there another suggestion that you would feel comfortable with that helps you get to know your team on a personal level that we can try instead?
Yeah.
Whatever that is. I don't know. You know, I've heard people doing like online escape rooms together as a team, you know, kind of a team building exercise, but still COVID friendly, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what that looks like for your team specifically, but something like that might be in the sweet spot where everybody is feeling comfortable with that. And it might not be ideal, but at least everybody's okay with it and you're not putting anybody at risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you say, look, we're going to do this at a different time a year from now or something like this and plan on. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here for the most part. But
yeah,
I mean, the team buy-in is huge. And if they're not like 100% saying, yeah, let's all get together, then I think you need to definitely listen to that. And mm-hmm. you yourself are already not 100% behind it. So, you know, I think expressing that to your team as well is important.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, so I'd love to hear from folks listening, like, you know, if you have a team and you've done retreats in the past and you're looking at doing it again, how are you thinking about it? How are you structuring it? I think there has to be an option for people not to do it and participate remotely. That's what Joel from Buffer and Nick were talking about on Twitter. And I think that, you know, Dave, we talk a lot about like things from COVID that will carry over into, you know, the foreseeable future of our work lives is, I think, stuff like that is, you know, if we are at the point where we can do an in-person retreat, it has to be inclusive of people who can't or don't want to come. Whereas in the past, like, I think the assumption has been everyone comes. And like, that's kind of not fair to some people because they don't want to, or they can't be away from their families, or they don't like traveling, you know, but they still want to participate in the things that the company does. And I think that's like, as a remote company, we need to be inclusive of all those things. And I think sometimes we've just said like, hey, fuck it, we're going to Lisbon or we're going to San Diego. Here's your plane ticket. And that's like us assuming that people are cool with that. And that's not always the case.
COVID yeah. As the company grows, that's certainly more important, but yes, yeah. Would love to hear what your thoughts are on it. Give us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. Hit us up on Twitter or wherever you can find Craig or I hanging out. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.